We're reading from Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, text number 6. The chapter is entitled Attaining the Supreme. Yang yang vapi smaram bhavam yajyantyante kalevaram tam tam ivait konteya sarata bhava pavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Purport. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharat, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. So some of you might think, what is the harm to think of an animal at the time of death, your pet dog, your pet cat? But actually it's a downgrade from the human form of life. It's not an upgrade. So you can go down as well as up. So it's better to think of Krishna at the time of death, and then you will get an upgrade in your next life. And you may even get the final upgrade to the spiritual world, where you don't need any more upgrades again. Although as a deer, he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. Mukam karati vachalam bhangam langhete grim yaki pantamam bande shiru tinatayinam. Om gyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshumiritam yena tasamai shi gurave namah. So here we are urged to remember Krishna. Now why should we remember Krishna? Because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he will help us to return to our original spiritual body, which is now covered by our material body. And why should we have a spiritual body? Because in this body, we have so many problems. We have to die. We have to get old. We have disease. And birth is also a problem. I think mothers who have children will understand some of that. But for the child, there's even more problem than for the mother. The child suffers much more at the time of birth. So, therefore, we should have a body that's eternal. We should have a body that doesn't die. We should have a body that's spiritual. We don't get old. We don't get sick. And that is our normal position, our normal constitutional position. So what happens at the time of death? This is the time of decision when we will get our next body. So what happens? The senses slowly stop one by one. We lose our sense of sight. We lose our sense of touch. And the hearing is the last sense to go. And it's very difficult to remember anything at the time of death because it's so disorienting. So during our life now, we spend our youth mostly to get wealth. But when you're an old person, you spend your wealth, to get health. So when you're young, you're trying to get the wealth. And when you're old, you have the wealth, but you need it to get your health. So it's a losing situation. But time passes, and we neglect our real welfare. and our real wealth. Now, I would like to give you an example of somebody who you might know about. He's not a Krishna person. His name was Alexander the Great. You've heard of him? He's in history class. So he was an intelligent person. He came to India. He conquered India. And he learned something from the sages there. So when he was on his deathbed, he called his generals. And he told them, I have three ultimate wishes. The first wish is, the best doctor should carry my coffin. The second wish is that all my wealth that I've accumulated should be strewn on the path on the way to the cemetery where they're going to bury me. And his third wish was my hand should be let loose outside the coffin for everyone to see. Now, why did he have these three strange wishes? Because he wanted to teach people that he wanted the best doctors to carry his coffin, because even the best doctor cannot save you when it's your time to die. And the second one was to have all his wealth strewn on the path, because you can't take it with you. You have to leave it here. So everybody should understand that. When they're on the way to the cemetery, you can't take anything with you. And the third thing, he wanted his hands to hang loose outside so everybody could see that you come empty-handed and you leave empty-handed at the time of death. So he was teaching people that there's one thing that's the most valuable thing in your life, and that is time. Time is the most valuable thing. You cannot buy back a second of time. Now it's 5:08:19. Now, if you want to buy back 5 o'clock, can you buy it with any amount of money? No, it's something you can't buy. Time you can't buy. So, therefore, he said, I want everyone to really value their time. Because if you give your time to someone, then you're giving your life. You're giving your blood. So, we don't take to our grave anything material, although our good deeds can be our traveler's checks, or our bad deeds, actually. A sinful person, if you do impious acts in this life, you get a free ticket to hell, free. And if you do good things, then you get a ticket to the spiritual world. So we're trying to purchase our ticket to the spiritual world by chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping Goni Thai. So time, why is it our most precious treasure? Who can tell me why time is the most precious thing? Anybody know? Any guess? Yeah.
It's free and we can still spend it how we like.
It's free and we can spend it as we like. Good, good. Very nice. Any other ideas? Why is time the most precious thing we have?
You cannot get that. Time is precious because you cannot get it back.
Cannot get it back?
What decision you made at that interval of time?
Right. You can't get it back. Okay. Okay. You can't get it back. It's free. And any other ideas? Why is time the most precious thing we have?
Because you can't stop time.
You can't stop it? Yeah?
Time is killing our body.
Time is killing our body. It's taking away our duration of life. Yes? Yes?
Mostly the past is history, the future is a mystery. Now is a gift. That's what it's called, a present.
So past is what?
History.
Past is history. Future is a mystery.
Yeah.
So therefore, be in the present.
But now is a gift. That's
now is a gift.
The present.
So we should be in the present.
Right. That's what it's called. The present.
That's why it's called... Oh, it's a present. Okay, yeah. Now I got it. It's a present. The present is a present. Okay. Any other ideas here on time? Yes?
Life is temporary.
Life is temporary. Okay, it's limited. We have a limited amount of time. We don't know how long we have, actually. Yes?
Krishna is time.
Krishna is time. Okay, good. So the best gift you can give to your family and friends is your time, actually. Time is the best gift. So Alexander said, may God grant you plenty of time. May you have the wisdom to give it away so that you can live, love, and die in peace. So how can one die in the proper state of mind? What happens at the time of death, just before death? Your whole life goes in front of you. And you review your whole life. And then you look at the different parts of your life, and then your mind gets stuck at the part that you're most attached to or most afraid of, at the most striking part. I had one lady in my class before she explained, before she came to Krishna consciousness, she had a near-death experience, and she fell off her bicycle, hit her head, and her whole life went in front of her. And it stopped at one point when, as a teenager, she had killed a cat. That's where her life stopped. Her mind stopped right there, because that was the most scary or worst thing that she ever did in her life, and it influenced her. So then, if she had died at that moment, guess where she would have gone? She would have become a cat, which is not a very good idea. So we have to be very, very careful. Every desire we have is stored in our subtle body. We go through the day taking pictures, and they're stored in our heart. So every desire that we have can create a whole nother body, a whole nother birth to go through. So we need to think, is it worth it? So Prabhupada says that, of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. So we just had a seminar on how to think of Krishna as the earth, as the trees, as the sky, how to remember Krishna, how to remember what we can learn from the trees, what we can learn from the earth, what we can learn from the sky, from the wind, from so many things. So we should see Krishna everywhere. We should see Krishna in all beings. And this will help us. Now I'd like to read you something from one of my godbrothers, a sannyasi, who wrote an offering to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And it's all about this topic, about leaving your body. And very interestingly, he writes, "I'm looking forward to the end." He says, "How can I get myself to realize I'll someday be watching my final minutes tick away? Where will I be? Will I be with devotees? Will I die from an accident? Will I be in extreme pain? Will I be with people who are happy that I'm dying, who are killing me? Or with those who feel frightened but do not know what to do or say?" So he said, death is all around us, isn't it? Yudhisthira Maharaj said, the most wonderful thing in this world is that all around us people are dying, but we think we'll not die. We will live forever. So you see, if you get cancer or something, you think, why me? But why not you? Because everybody has to die sometime. So he says, when I quote from Bhagavad Gita, do I realize one day I will also be watching my last moment slip away? I should, but do I? What will it be like knowing I will not go back to my familiar room, or I will no longer peck away at my beloved computer? And that was when I was in my first earthquake in Christchurch. The first thought went to my computer, it's going to fall off from the table if we have another tremor. I better go save my computer. It was what I was thinking when I was in my first earthquake. And the second one, it was even worse. But I was thinking of Krishna, hopefully. So he said, "I'm trying to remember my days are numbered. Each day counts. I should try to help others, deliver others. That's the real duty. Somehow I must do that. If nothing else, I can say I prayed a lot. But really, isn't that what devotion is all about? Maybe one day you'll use me for something when I become a little pure. Last year I attended several funerals. In a bizarre way, I like funerals. I like being reminded I will one day lie there. Look there, that will be my body in that casket. I'll lie there with people gathered around me, at least my body, wondering what type of prasadam is going to be served later. The service will pass, and the world will go on without skipping a beat. But not I. I will be gone to another scene." That is what I always think at funerals, that there is this one special funeral that is the last funeral I will have to attend, at least in this life. I will not have to look for a ride home afterward. Material nature has made all the arrangements. Maybe I'll go back to whatever planetary system I came from, as it is most certain I did not come from this one. A lot of us have that feeling, actually, is that we don't belong here so much. So will I feel a sense of failure? Will I be desperate to change something that now, post-mortem, cannot be changed? I ask myself these questions again and again. That way I can prepare and act accordingly. So the answer will be no. After all, death may come sooner than I think. Really, isn't death always sooner than we think? Always before we are ready? Death is never convenient or timely, is it? This year, my mother passed away. A very dedicated lady, a very religious lady, a very funny lady. She had an odd sense of humor. Maybe that is where I get my sense of humor, should we decide to call it that. During my youth, we were close, but after I chose to become a devotee, we became contestants. Then, about 8 or 9 years ago, my mother developed symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. You know what that is, when you don't remember even your family or anything? An odd twist of fate that in the Alzheimer's stage, she seemed to sincerely like me again. Without a religious stipulation. But to her, I was now a stranger. The mother-child reunion in outer space. The last words she ever said to me were, "It was so nice to have met you." That from your mother. Interesting parting remark, coming from your mother. And still, as I think back, you know, there was something deeply warm and reassuring about that comment. So, yes, we meet and we part. And sometimes we don't even remember our family members. We may lose our memory at the time of death. I saw an interesting thing on Facebook that there were three men, and they were asked the same question, that after you die, what would you like people to say about you? So the first man said, I would like people to say I was very kind and honest and loving. The second person said, I would like people to say I was a good family man and I was hardworking and I accomplished a lot. And the third man said, I would like people to say, just look, he's moving. He's moving. So, yeah, we don't want to die. We don't want to die, actually. But we don't prepare. And the best preparation is to develop a spiritual body. Because you can then honestly say, yes, he's moving. He's moving to the spiritual world. He may not be moving here, but and we cannot see the subtle body, what's happening with the subtle body. If you haven't practiced this Krishna consciousness, then at the time of death, your mind will take you to your next body, your subtle body, your mind intelligence. You keep it, and it will take you to your next body. But if you're a devotee, then you leave both bodies here, mental body and physical body, and you go in your spiritual body to the spiritual world. So this is very, very nice. Srila Prabhupada said in a lecture, we should be sada tad bhava bhavita, means Krishna. Prabhupada is always thinking of Krishna, so even in this verse, he put the name Krishna when it wasn't there. And scholars would sometimes complain, why is he putting Krishna everywhere in the translation when it's not even there? Sanskrit is something else. So, because Prabhupada, he understood the purpose of Krishna. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is sometimes very, very strict. He says, don't tell this science to those who are not austere, those who are not devotees. But the devotee, he doesn't follow Krishna's advice, and he does tell everyone about this Krishna consciousness movement. He tells everyone that you're not this body, because it's for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a Hindu, a Muslim, or a Christian. Everybody is not the body. It's a science of the soul. So therefore, he's more merciful than the Lord because he knows the mission of the Lord. He knows the desire of the Lord. So let me ask those of you who are in this room, what is the desire of the Lord then, that Srila Prabhupada knows, and that's why he's more merciful, and he even goes beyond Krishna's advice here. What is the desire of the Lord, actually? Why did he speak this Bhagavad Gita? Was it just for Arjuna, or what is it for us too, actually? What is desire? Yeah? What did he say?
That everyone could go back to Godhead.
Everyone should go back to Godhead. Okay. So because the devotee knows this, then he puts in the word Krishna so everybody knows how to think. What to think of at the time of death. So we know in our books in Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj, he had to face death in 7 days. He got the notice. In 7 days, you die. So he had one prayer at the time of death. He said, offering obeisances to all you Brahmins, I pray that if I have to take my birth here, I will have attachment to Krishna, association with devotees, friendly relations with all living beings. And now we're studying the story of Dhruva Maharaj. So we haven't got to the part where he leaves his body. But an airplane, a spiritual airplane, will come for him, a beautiful golden airplane. And he will be ready to get on the airplane. But before he goes on the airplane, death comes. And what does he do with death? He steps on the head of death to get into the airplane. So that is how it is for the devotees. It's described at the time of death. It is compared to a cat catching a rat in its mouth. For most people. For most people, it's like a cat catching a rat. And what is the rat feeling when it's in the mouth of the cat? Anxiety, fear, what's going to happen, disorientation. Of course, he knows what's going to happen to him. He's going to be eaten alive and die. But for the devotee, it's different. For the devotee, it's still the cat. He's in the mouth of the mother cat, and he's the kitten. The kitten in the mouth of the mother cat feels security, safety, because the kitten sometimes might stray away this way and that way, but the mother cat brings the kitten back and brings the kitten back to home. So sometimes we may stray here and there, but Krishna catches us, the mother cat, and he puts us on the right direction and he takes us home back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada, when he was in his last year, 1977, he didn't eat for like 6 months. And he got a presentation of his books, printed in Portuguese. And he said, this material world is just bones. This is not our real life. The real life, we are not concerned with bones. Our real concern is the living force. It may remain, it may go, it doesn't matter. Real life is sustaining the bones. So when he was ready to go, we weren't ready. We didn't want to let him go. So he was trying to tell us, you know, it's okay either way. Well, it was for him, but not for us. For us, it was a problem. So, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, yes, Prabhupada, you are sustaining life only with bones. And so Prabhupada said, okay, take care of the bones as long as possible, but real life is here. So what shall we do? We should be aware how valuable our time is. One time I went to an old folks home, and I saw my mother-in-law there. And it was very sad because they were all in diapers. They were preparing for their next life, you could see, really. They were all in diapers. And they had an exercise session. They would sit in their wheelchairs in a circle and play with balloons, hitting balloons back and forth. So, and very miserable. And when I visited my mother-in-law, we showed her some pictures of the family, of herself, and we asked her which one was her favorite picture. I mean, but she was so drugged at the same time. They're really drugged. So she picked a picture of her normal. And she said, that's my favorite picture, just her in her normal state of being. And so, they have no idea what is the goal of life, and they watch TV, and it doesn't do any good. It doesn't help them. But it's very much suffering. So we should, before that time, we should use every moment to remember Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave us a prayer. My dear Krishna, please remind me to always chant your holy name. Please do not put me into forgetfulness. You are sitting within me, a super soul. So you can put me into forgetfulness or into remembering you. So please do not put me into forgetfulness. Please always remind me to chant. Even you send me into hell, it doesn't matter, as long as I can always chant Hare Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, we have here, are singing one very nice song, requesting everyone to please chant Hare Krishna and come along with them. So that is our request to everyone. So that was Srila Prabhupada's request, that you all chant Hare Krishna and come along with us and chant. And you have a very happy life in this life. And at the end, you will not be bewildered. You will not see the messengers of death. You will see the messengers of life, the Vishnu Dutas. And they will take you to the spiritual world. So do we have any questions on this or comments? Yes.
Tulisiko aina olla valmiin siihen, että jos Kristus tulee ja että haluatko tulla, niin tulisiko aina olla siellä valmiin jättämään.
Maybe you should be, yeah.
Should one always be ready to give up this body?
Should one be always ready to give up this body? Yes, one should be prepared. There is one example of one brahmachari who was very prepared. He was a pujari in our retreat in Govardhan. And one morning he called and said, oh, I can't make it for the puja. I'm very, very sick, extreme pain in my stomach. I cannot move. So he started giving everything away to all his friends. And then we sent Adi Purush, one of our staff, there to find to see him. And he said, and he looked at him, he said, oh, Prabhu, this is just gas. You're not going to die. But he was prepared. He was giving all his things away. And so the brahmachari, we should all always be prepared to die. And the preparation means that we practice in this life. If we fall down and we should say, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. If the plane, there's turbulence, we should say that. In the West, there was one book distributor lady, and she fell down on the ice when trying to distribute a book to somebody. And she said, Krishna, Krishna. And the guy was so impressed, he bought the book. He said, if I fell down, I would say a lot of other things. She was there. Yes? I have a question. Yes?
In Chaitanya's prayer,
yeah.
Chaitanya is praying, let me be your servant, life after life.
Very good, yes.
So can it be that one practices Krishna consciousness, be fully Krishna conscious, but takes another birth?
Yeah, okay, everybody hear that question? Yeah, is it possible that you're a devotee and you don't go back to Godhead and you take another birth? This is for very advanced devotees, for our gurus. Those who want to be a spiritual master, a guru, the promise at the time of initiation by the spiritual master is that I will take you back to Godhead, and if you don't make it in this life, I will come back next life and take you. So life after life means a very serious thing. We should not desire that. We should not desire to come back. For us, we should desire to go back to Godhead and save our guru a lot of trouble. And that's what Prabhupada told us. In this life, you go back. In this very life, you should go back to Godhead. But those who take the service of spiritual master, it means they're willing to come back. It's a very sacrificial service. It's a great sacrifice. And it's not something you can do artificially. It comes naturally at a certain level of devotion. The prayer that you mentioned is number 4 in the list. So that means you're on the level of ruchi. It's all already, you're liberated from material desires. Natanam, najanam, nasundarim. I don't want any of these material things. Only I want service, birth after birth. So that means you're already liberated, at one stage of liberation, and you have a taste for chanting the holy name. At that stage, then you can deliver others and come back birth after birth. But it's a very advanced stage. But it's not that you come back and you're not in the spiritual world. You go to the spiritual world and you come back at the same time you're in the spiritual world and here. Both places simultaneously. So for one who can do that, okay, birth after birth. But if you can't do that, then just go back to Godhead in this life. Better be serious and go back and don't make trouble for your Guru Maharaj. Yes?
So that means that Prabhupada is both here and in spiritual.
Yes. He was in two places in one time. Here in the material and in the spiritual at the same time. Yes.
So, you need me and Sira Prabhupada personally, okay?
Yes. Many times.
Okay, what kind of memories do you have?
Oh, we can go on forever.
Let's go on.
Something special. Okay, I'll tell you something special, which I didn't tell this morning. Actually, this two special things Srila Prabhupada said to me. One was in Vrindavan, one was in Mayapur. And what he said to me, I never understood until 30 years later. when what he said came true. So it was like I understood whatever the pure devotee says, in whatever way he says it, it must come true. So the first thing he said, I was in Vrindavan in 1972, and he singled me out from all the other devotees. He said, "Oh, my sister tells me you speak Bhagavatam very nicely." So I was trying to think, I never spoke Bhagavatam, to speak of nicely. So I was trying to think, what did that mean? So then I remembered on Janamashtami day, all of us, we had to read Krishna book from morning till night. So my turn came, I was reading Krishna book in English, and Prabhupada's sister was sitting in front of me, and she didn't know any English, only Bengali. But I was reading with a lot of drama, and she was crying when she heard me reading. And she told Prabhupada she speaks Bhagavatam very nicely. So 30 years later, I started speaking Bhagavatam. I started teaching Bhagavatam. So what he said came true, but although it was indirect even, but it came from his mouth. So that was the first thing. Second thing was in Mayapur, 1973. I was pujari in Calcutta, India, for 7 years. So in 73, it was my second year. And Prabhupada came, and so Prabhupada's Sanskrit scholar who was traveling with him, he knew me, that I knew how to type. Because the first day I joined, I was typing this Bhagavad Gita. And I had to learn Sanskrit because you had to change the Sanskrit into English when you type. So the first day I lived in the temple, they gave me this Isha Upanishad book and said, here's Sanskrit, now you have to change it. You learn it, put it from Sanskrit into English. You read the Sanskrit, put it into English. So then when he met me in Calcutta, he remembered me and he said, okay, Prabhupada wants to translate Chaitanya Charitamrita and he needs someone to type it. So we're going to Mayapur tomorrow. So all you have to do is learn how to read Bengali and we're leaving tomorrow. I said, no problem. I'm coming. We just wanted to be with Prabhupada no matter what. So he taught us impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Nothing is impossible. So I learned to read Bengali in about 1-2 hours. And I was off the next day with Srila Prabhupada. And we were living in the Lotus building, which was under construction. It was not very much of a lotus at that time. There were bathrooms, but no water in the pipes. There were no pipes. I mean, there were bathrooms, but no pipes. So we had to go down and pump the water and bring it up and... Yeah, and we had to go out in the field, actually, for that. And for baths, we could bring water up. And we were living in this building, and there were, like, you know, places, holes in the wall for windows, but no windows were there. And there were there were doors, but no handles, so you couldn't really shut the door. And then the room we were staying had no door. And to get to the door, we had to go through the next room, which had no floor. So it was like to walk across this long plank. It was very austere. So I was typing there for Srila Prabhupada. And he was walking and looking in the place where I was typing, looking in the window. And he saw me. I was sitting there with this manual typewriter. We didn't have electricity so much. And the dictaphone. And I was listening to Prabhupada speak in Bengali. I had this big, huge Bengali book, and so I would hear the Bengali, I would read the Bengali, and I would type it in English letters, Roman transliteration. So he looked at me, he said, "Oh, you know Bengali?" I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." I just learned the day before, you know, how to read. So he said, "Oh, very good. Come, very good editor, come to my room." So I went to his room, he said, "So, you know Bengali?" "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." So he said, "So, you have to learn how to type in Bengali." I said, "Okay." And then he sent one brahmachari to teach me. And so while I was typing, I said to the brahmachari, he said, "Look, you don't have to look at the keys. You just look at the page, you remember where the keys are, and you type." So I was teaching him touch typing in Bengali. And he said, "Oh, now I understand what Prabhupada said to me. He said, you teach her and you learn from her also." So I was teaching right in the beginning. But the thing that was very wonderful that Prabhupada said to me, "So you learn to type in Bengali and then we will we will write many books together. I said, wow. Then I had dreams. I'm going to travel with Prabhupada and do all his books with him. But it never happened. Because then in Calcutta, there was an emergency. I was in Mayapur. They called me back because all the pujaris were leaving the temple because we got a new president named Garba Muni. Everyone was afraid of him. So I became the head pujari instead of traveling with Prabhupada. But he said I would write many books with him. And so now I wrote 9 books already. And that's with him. Then I understood. 30 years later, oh, yeah, what he said came true. Those were the two, like, major things that happened. As a pujari, many things happened. I was doing Mangalarti. And Prabhupada, when I came to offer the ghee lamp to everybody, then Prabhupada was standing right behind me. In our temple, there was no division between the deities and the temple. It was the same level. So he was practically like 1 foot behind me, right behind me, watching me for the whole arti. And I was so nervous, and it was the best arti, most attentive arti I ever did. And after that, I thought, well, I should do all my artis like that, that Prabhupada's watching. I should do all my service like Prabhupada's right behind watching me. I'll really do my service nicely like that. And many times he would, one thing happened, we had an abundance of flowers, as I was describing this morning. We had 50 garlands every day, and 144 lotuses, 144 roses. So Prabhupada loved the flower decoration. And one time after the darshan arti, he called my husband and I up and said, thank you very much for doing this service here of serving Radha Govinda. And then while we were offering obeisances to Prabhupada, he said something which we didn't hear, but one sannyasi told us afterwards, because the Prabhupada was surrounded by sannyasis on the Vyasasan. They were all around him. And they said, did you hear what Prabhupada said when you bowed down? I said, no. What did he say? And he said, be blessed. So we got the blessings. But then I realized, you know, okay, I got the blessings that day, but next day I have to earn them again. It's not like you're finished. Of course, when you please the spiritual master, then you're very happy and you know you're doing something right. But you have to keep on earning the blessings every day. It's like a lifetime's work. Yeah. And then one other thing happened when I was offering obeisances, like, because my temple president was a sannyasi, he didn't really understand that we needed nice clothes and things. So, you know, I had a few holes and I was trying to hide the holes when I was offering obeisances. And Prabhupada noticed, for sure. Because 4 days later, somehow or other, one of the richest men in life members came and said, I'm taking you to all the sari shops in Calcutta and get you some saris. Ever since then, I never had trouble getting saris. One time one shop owner gave me 20 saris. But at that time, Lakshmi Moni was visiting with all her girls, like 15 girls. So I said, look, I just got 20 saris. So, you know, gave them to her girls and kept a few. So it would happen like that. Some shop owner would just want to give me, or people would give me. I just have to say, okay, no more. No more saris. My whole life, you know, it's like the blessing. Anyway, yeah, those are a few things with Prabhupada. Another time, I was on a morning walk in Bombay. And Prabhupada was like in his 70s. I was in my 20s. And he was walking so fast. And I was always trying to figure out, how does he walk so fast? And sometimes I would watch him in the class, just watching him, trying to figure out, where is he here? Is he somewhere else? He didn't look. He looked kind of here, but he looked kind of somewhere else too at the same time. I never could figure out, because you can't understand with your intelligence. You have to understand with devotion. So one time he was giving Bhagavad Gita class, 9th chapter, verse 11. And all the brahmacharis had their books, Gita books. I didn't have a book, but when it came time for Mataji's, I just said the verse from memory. And Prabhupada looked at me and he was so happy that I knew the verse. So he wanted us to learn these verses and preach. So that's a few things that happened, most of the things that happened to me. We would see him often in Calcutta because he would come there on his way to Mayapur and from Mayapur to Calcutta. So we would see him a lot there. We would give classes in Calcutta. Mostly I couldn't associate with him because I had 20-hour service. And then the poor servants of Prabhupada, they came and, you know, they didn't know what to make of our temple because the kitchen was 1 foot by 2 feet by 2 feet. Big coal stove took up most of the kitchen. And they didn't know what to make of that stove. So I had to help them, kind of teach them how to cook on the coal stove and this kind of things. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes?
Guru.
Everyone can be guru because he said it's very simple. Prabhupada said you just tell everyone about Krishna, whoever you meet. So everyone can be a guru. There are different levels of guru. There are different levels. So one level is the beginning devotee. You can just tell everyone you meet about Krishna. And then there's other levels of that you're willing to take on the karma of other people. So that's a different level of guru. That's a Diksha Guru, Diksha, and Shiksha even. And priests in ceremonies, they also give their pious credits to those who they do the sacrifices for. That's another type of Guru. So the most simplest Guru is everyone should be Guru, everyone should tell about Krishna to others, Krishna Upadesh. Jari Deko Tari Koho Krishna Upadesh. Amar Agyai Guru Koya Tara Edesh. On my order, you become Guru. So that can be taken on many levels. That can be taken on. According to advancement, if you try to be a guru on a higher level and you're not on that level, then you'll fall down. So better you be the guru on the simple level first. And teach. Just teach or share Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? Yes. Four children. Congratulations.
I'm thinking like, what is the most important I can give to my children?
What's the most important thing? As a mother of four children, what is the most important thing you can give your children? The most important thing is to give them a taste for spiritual life. Make it fun. Don't force them. Don't force them to chant or to do anything, but make it like really fun. And then they'll like to do it, just like our Tapo, I forgot his name. Tapo, no. Yeah. Anyway, you teach in the, what's I forgot your name. Sorry. Teaching in the schools, huh? Tapo Divyam. I remembered your first part of the name. Tapo Divyam. So he's teaching in the schools, and he said the children, even of other faiths, want to go to his class because it's the most fun. So you should make it like that for the kids. Challenge their intelligence. Make it like the fun time for them. Now we get to do this. So then give them a taste. It's actually the duty of the mother to liberate the children. You have that duty. You have a guru, the mother, father, they're all supposed to liberate their children. So you do have that duty. And if you do that, then even if you don't get liberated, they'll liberate you. Hopefully one of them. One of them may liberate you. Yeah. If you just, even in the beginning level, I mean, like if you're a pure devotee, you liberate 100 generations before and after. If you're a preacher, a medium level, you liberate 14 generations before and after. If you're just beginning, you liberate 3 generations before and after just by chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasad. Okay, any other, is it, what time is the feast supposed to be now? Yeah, okay, so we should stop now, and we'll have the prasadam. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.